This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. The BBC Radio's Giles Edwards first came to North Carolina in 2014. He wanted to explore the politics of voting and ballot access. It was 1 year after the U.S. Supreme Court effectively gutted the Voting Rights Act, and not long after this state embarked on its own efforts to overhaul voting, including legislation that made it harder to register to vote. That law was struck down by a federal court that said it targeted African-American voters with, quote, almost surgical precision. This year, Giles decided to come back and talk with many of the same people about new pressures on voting rights and the ongoing debate over voter fraud and voter suppression. Giles Edwards is a producer and reporter with the BBC, BBC Radio. His new documentary is called The Dark Sides of American Democracy, and he joins us from London. Giles Edwards, welcome to the State of Things.
Thank you very much. I'm very happy to be with you, Frank.
Well, it's good to have you back in the state, even though you're speaking with us from London. But talk about that trip in 2014. What were you hoping to find out?
Well, like you said, it came right after the Voting Rights Act was, large part of it was struck down by the Supreme Court. And I was looking to find a state where we could see what the impact of this would be. And the simple fact is that North Carolina moved furthest, fastest. And so we came to find out what that would mean on the ground. What, you know, it's all very well having a court case, but how does that play out with real politicians and real voters?
When you say move furthest, fastest, what do you mean?
Well, what you've referred to as the omnibus elections law. You mentioned that it was struck down, but it had a whole series of measures in it to make it more difficult for voting fraud to happen, as the Republicans who passed it would say. And it, you know, changed North Carolina's laws more dramatically than any other state was changing at that time.
So the debate we see here about this is that all of a sudden, the minute the voting rights law was mostly struck down, the North Carolina legislature, Republican-led legislature, was poised to act. It changed the law, and it said, well, we have to protect ourselves against voter fraud. Talk about the environment in which that debate took place.
Well, I mean, you're absolutely right, and there was that was one of the things which struck me at the time, is how rapidly the legislature changed. It was a time, if you remember, in 2014, when President Obama wasn't at the peak of his popularity, shall we put it like that, and the Republican parties across the United States were looking to make gains. And it just seemed an interesting question to me as to what the motivation here for this changing voting law was. The Democrats consistently, and to this day, and in my reporting this year, the Democrats and the left typically say there is no voter fraud. This is all a canard. It's a made-up thing to suppress votes. And Republicans and the right typically, not exclusively, say, you know, we are concerned about voter fraud. There is a real problem here, and we need to take some action.
You went to Winston-Salem on your trip to explore that question. Tell us what you found there.
Well, in Winston-Salem, I went out with a guy called Eric Ellison, who back in 2014 was a Democratic-affiliated attorney, and he's now the chair of the Forsyth County Party. He was pretty busy, I have to say, as you might expect, with some very competitive elections. But we went back to the same part of the city that we went to, the Greenways part of Winston-Salem that we went to back in 2014. It's a lower income, predominantly African-American neighborhood. And people are concerned about this stuff. I mean, Eric was concerned about it, and people who were talking to him often knew about it. I think they were less concerned than they were in 2014, if I'm being perfectly honest, when it was very much current, and there's less on the cards this year, although obviously this question of the constitutional amendment, which your listeners will all get the right to vote on in a couple of days' time, some of them will have done already, but it felt at the time much more pressing in 2014 than it does this year, at least.
And here's what he told you.
I will say, as an African-American man, we do not like obstacles in us exercising our right to vote. Powers that be in this country have always put little small obstacles in our way. Your right to vote is a fundamental right that we have fought for, people have died for, black and white people have died for that right. You know, out of respect for my ancestors, you know, they fought for these rights and I got to protect these rights. That's how I look at this. I don't want to be overly dramatic about it. But, you know, that's what it's about.
That's Eric Ellison, the chair of the Forsyth County Democratic Party. I'm talking to BBC producer and reporter Giles Edwards, whose BBC radio doc on North Carolina voting access is called The Dark Sides of American Democracy. So tell us more about your impression of these obstacles. I mean, you come from Great Britain. You have to look at try to understand our electoral system, which is fairly incomprehensible, I think, to people who come from another place, I think, in a lot of ways. As you look at these laws, do they look like obstacles? How did you interpret the various interpretations of the meaning of these laws and the intention behind these laws?
That's the key question, and it's an almost impossible question for me to answer. You know, I spoke to also David Lewis, who's the guy who passed these laws. He said our intention is just to deal with voter fraud. I spoke to Eric, who said this is completely intended to suppress the rights of people in my neighborhood. And it's very difficult for me to answer that question about intention. What we can look at, perhaps, is about effect. And, you know, the court, the appeals court that you mentioned in the introduction there, overturned that law that I came to visit about in 2014. And you quoted the court ruling, which said it would target African Americans with almost surgical precision. So maybe that's part of the answer. I mean, I will say one other thing, which is that I spoke to one of the members of the President's Commission on voter fraud, which you mentioned with your last guest. You were talking to your last guest about this. And he said, look, it's just patronizing to assume that African-American people can't get access to voter ID, for example, in the same way that white or Caucasian voters can. But some of the people I spoke to in Winston-Salem said, you know, it's tough for us. If we're working two jobs, and we have to take half a morning off work to go to the DMV to get our driver's license updated because we have to move twice this year, that is more difficult than it is for somebody who's in a salaried job who perhaps can just take the morning off work.
Yeah, and part of the objection, too, was a look at which IDs were going to be permissible and which weren't. So a college ID, college students tend to be more progressive in their voting. Those college IDs would not be permissible. A passport tend to be held by people who have greater wealth. Those would be permissible. I think that was part of the argument when we looked at the actual details, which would be usable and which wouldn't. But you did talk to Jay Delancey, and he's the executive director of North Carolina's Voter Integrity Project. And in addition to the idea that he promoted that it's patronizing to suggest that African Americans would have a harder time, he also said, look, fraud is a real legitimate concern.
That's right,
and
yeah.
Let's listen to what he told you.
Okay, well, they want it both ways, don't they? They say, this doesn't exist. Where's your evidence? Okay, we'll secure the evidence. No, what are you doing that for? You're trying to suppress the vote. You're going on a fishing expedition. So they can't have it both ways. Do they want the proof or not? And if they want the proof, then the ugly thing you have to do is you have to get the evidence and look at it. And that's what they're doing. Number two is, we've got too many eyewitness accounts. The problem is, for the last 60 years, the paradigm has all been about whatever you do, don't make it inconvenient for anyone to vote because you're suppressing them.
Where does that leave you on the question of whether any of these laws reduce turnout?
I don't believe them, but look at the proof they'll use. They'll show numbers. Yes, the turnout I want to suppress is illegal voting. And I don't know what that number is, but I know it's a high number.
Jay Delancey, executive director of the North Carolina Voter Integrity Project. I'm talking with BBC producer and reporter Giles Edwards about his new documentary, The Dark Sides of American Democracy. So do we know, I mean, you also reached out to someone who's on the Presidential Voter Integrity Commission, the president impaneled, and who is particularly concerned about non-U.S. citizens voting illegally. What did you learn through that conversation?
Well, again, one of the things that is interesting about this is it's not quite an evidence-free zone, but it's kind of an evidence-free zone. What I essentially find is that each side is kind of asserting, Jay's side and Hans von Spakovsky, who you mentioned, was on the president's panel, who works in Washington, D.C. for the Conservative Heritage Foundation, kind of says, look, there's lots of voter fraud. We think there might be. Look at all these examples. But when you come to it, and this question of non-citizens voting is a really interesting one, the examples they found, for example, in eastern North Carolina, and that's what Jay DeLancey was talking about in that last clip. There's a U.S. attorney for the Eastern District is investigating questions about whether non-citizens are voting, and he's subpoenaed a lot of evidence from the state and county boards of elections, millions and millions and millions of pieces of information. But the question that they found with most of the cases so far is that this is not what, well, it depends on what your definition of fraud is. These are people who are definitely not entitled to vote. So there's 19 of these folks, definitely not entitled to vote. They're not citizens. But when the state board of elections, for example, looked into these cases, they found they're not so much somebody trying to have a whole-scale subversion of the American election system, but they're people who've made a mistake. They've misunderstood their rights. Somebody who maybe is a green card holder, somebody who, in other words, is a permanent resident, and confuses that with, do they have residency and voted illegally? There's no question that they've broken the law, I think. There's no question that it has the same effect as if you or I tried to deliberately break the law. The effect on the electoral system is the same. But this question of intent, it seems to me, is kind of an interesting one. And I think an important one. And I tried to ask everybody who I spoke to about it, about how they consider this question of intent.
Now, but getting back to something you said earlier, even when there a mistake has been made, and yes, the law has been broken, the numbers are fairly low. And even when they search through thousands and tens of thousands of documents, and you know, there was some reporting, News 21, which is a Carnegie Knight investigative news project, did look into this in 2014, over 2,000 cases, 50 states, talking about 142 million registered voters, and found 38 cases that were successfully prosecuted. So even when they did come to the attention of law enforcement and were investigated fully, out of those hundreds, tens of millions of voters, they found this. So what's interesting is that there is some kind of evidence, albeit through investigative journalism, not through government. There was one case in North Carolina, I should point out, in 2014, Verna Rehm, who is 77, she did vote twice and pleaded guilty. Because she went in person to vote, and then she used her dead husband's name for an absentee ballot because he wanted to vote for Mitt Romney.
Right.
And so she submitted that absentee ballot in Mitt Romney's name. She pleaded guilty, but the fact is, voter ID wouldn't have stopped that either.
So right, and there was a case in North Carolina in 2016, and the district attorney declined to prosecute. Somebody's mother passed away very sadly, and had sort of dying wishes, I want to vote for Donald Trump, and the district attorney declined to prosecute. I mean, there definitely are these cases. I guess what Jay DeLancey would say, because he said it to me, is, well, that's fine, but these are very difficult to track down. So the fact that there aren't very big numbers or large numbers of people being prosecuted is not, in his view, evidence that it doesn't happen. And I personally suspect the number of actual fraud is slightly higher than that, because the amount of fraud in any human activity is higher than 142 cases in 14 million. Yeah. Whatever human beings do, there's always somebody committing fraud somewhere. But somewhere between that number and the very large number that Jay assumes, is it closer to 142? Is it closer to the very large numbers that Jay is talking about? I don't think anybody has an answer to that question. We just don't know.
Well, and then again, even if you find that, and certainly you do want to protect yourself against fraud, you don't want the system to be, I mean, this is a precious right.
Of course.
Democracy needs to be protected. But then the question is, how do you approach the problem? What are the rules that you write? And there again, a number of complaints. When you take polling places away from colleges and universities and put them in other places that are more likely to support Republican voters, that's when the suspicion arises. You talked with Target Democrat Stella Anderson about a polling station on the campus at App State University.
I did.
In Boone. Let's listen to her.
Over the years, with the attention given to it and a strong sense among many students that this shouldn't be so hard, and that it shouldn't have to be fought for at every turn, that made them value their vote and be more determined to exercise it. It certainly seemed that when they sensed that their ability to vote was being made more difficult or in some way threatened, that they sat up and paid attention and figured out pretty quickly there's some big stuff here at stake.
Watauga Democrat Stella Anderson talking with my guest, Giles Edwards, about a polling station at App State University in Boone. Giles Edwards' new documentary is called The Dark Sides of American Democracy. I guess this does also bring us to the question of effect. I mean, the fact is that the rights of voters on at App State campus, even if they lost their polling station, they can vote.
Right.
There's early voting.
Have you
taken a look at what effect it has had on the populations who say that they're being targeted?
Well, that was the core of that conversation you just heard with Stella there. So I visited her back in 2014 at the time the local Republicans were trying to kind of move the early voting station off the campus, which is right in the center of the campus, and move it elsewhere and open all these satellite stations in less populated parts of the county. And in the end, she took them to court and won. And now, 4 years later, it seems that everybody accepts, Republicans and Democrats on the county board, that early voting station should be there. But what she was saying in 2014 is that actually turnout went up. And it went up, she thinks, because students were students were enraged by this and thought, well, they're not going to take away that right. Maybe I need to go and register how important this is to me. And I'm sure it's because the parties, told them so and went out and campaigned that little bit harder.
Gerrymandering, of course, is another form of voter suppression that is very clear and you can't do anything about because of the way district voting. First of all, I wonder what happens when you go back to the UK and try to explain how we do things here in the United States and that gerrymandering is, in fact, legal and that you can actually get away with that,
some gerrymandering is legal and some isn't.
Racial gerrymandering, but North Carolina actually got caught with political gerrymandering, which has never been flagged. That's how far they went.
Right. And this is one of the reasons I came back this year, because there's these two or three states now have these quite significant, for their critics, political gerrymanders. North Carolina's one, Wisconsin is another. And they went to the Supreme Court, the Wisconsin case this year. The court decided not to take the case and sent it back on a technicality. But both of those cases are going to end up in the Supreme Court at some point, and the court is going to have to take a position one way or the other on this question of whether political gerrymandering is constitutional, and crucially, how much, because one person's political gerrymander is another's artfully drawn congressional map. As I heard when I spoke to David Lewis, the architect of this current set of maps, he took out his map and he said, "It's a good looking thing, isn't it?" it doesn't look like it, North Carolina's maps at the moment, and I know there's a lot of critics of them, but to an outsider, the old map with its crazy dog-legged 12th district all the way up from halfway up to Greensboro, some of that has gone away and it does look a much cleaner map. Now, the political effect still seems to be similar.
Sure. And if you happen to be, say you went to North Carolina A&T,
right,
where there's a line right down the middle of the campus,
right,
and you talk to a student there, I want to play this cut of tape because this is Braxton Bennington,
who is
with a liberal watchdog group Common Cause. But here he is as the two of you approach that line through the middle of campus.
And now we're here.
Now we have a different representative.
Different representative, completely different district. Completely different part of the state.
Some people might be listening to this and go, well, they've got to draw the line somewhere. What's
right.
the problem?
The rule is that you don't draw the district lines through a community of interest. You try to keep communities of interest together. So, for example, a church or a university. When you have a group of very like-minded voters, mostly the same race, mostly the same age, mostly the same party affiliation, and you sort of divide them up into two different districts, it's such a perfect case of dilution.
Braxton Bennington, student at North Carolina A&T who works with Common Cause, speaking with BBC producer Giles Edwards about within his new documentary, The Dark Sides of Democracy. Well, I've given you about 30 seconds to sum up, but maybe let me just stick with gerrymandering. Is that categorically different than the other charges of voter suppression in the 30 seconds I've given you?
Well, it's interesting. At the end, Braxton said to me, this is like the worst type of voter fraud. It totally reduces my vote, he said. And there's this horrible echo of his vote as a young African-American man on a historically black college and university campus, saying my vote is worth less than some other people's votes in this state. There's an unfortunate echo of the three-fifths compromise there, he said to me.
Giles Edwards, producer and reporter with the BBC. His documentary is The Dark Sides of American Democracy, airs on BBC Radio this week and is available online. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks so much, Frank.
Live sax music from Jim Henderson just ahead on The State of Things. Stay tuned.